Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
I don't know,
yes.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
I've lost the top of the microphone there, so just go back.
A broadcasting problem we've never had before.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck, the weekly podcast from The Times and Sunday Times. I'm Owen Slott and I'm playing the Wayne Barnes role today, trying to referee our two regular panellists, Stuart Barnes and Steve Jones. Barnes at yesterday went as close as dammit to sympathising with the project player controversy. Jonesy, who likes to see things in black and white, apparently couldn't disagree more. Well, more of that later. There has been a lot happening. A brilliant final weekend in the regular Premiership season. It's countdown time to the European finals, and the Lions have gathered at last and have been issued with new pants and socks. It does not get much more exciting than that. Jonesy, Barnsley, good to have you back this week.
Hello, Slotty.
Owen.
Great week, great weekend. Quick highlight, Stuart.
Highlight or low light?
Whatever, just whatever.
Very quick. A highlight, it was great to be in Llanelli and see a back line living up to the heritage of that famous old club. The Scarlets backs were brilliant against the Ospreys. The low light, I have to say, unfortunately, was Dan Bigger. Dan is a lovely bloke, but he's getting into this football-type mentality of arguing referees with everything. Dan Bigger also limped off with an ankle injury, which, of course, is a worry for the Lions. And last and not least, Dan Bigger is playing dreadfully at the moment, which is perhaps an even bigger worry for the Lions.
Personal bugbear, players who tell the touch judge where the ball went out for the line-out. Sean Maitland at the weekend apparently having a row with the touch judge. He should have been yellow carded or sent to, back
like
to New
that,
Zealand or something.
Didn't no, that.
So
really stroppy.
Yes, I still am. Jonesy,
sheer joy of watching Wasps play rugby, coached by a great, huge, mountainous prop, and playing the best rugby. And I said in the paper on the weekend, even if they don't win anything, I'll never forget the way that Worcester played this season.
My highlight was actually, I was just going to go for Thomas Young's first try in that game when they went left, right, up, down, round the corner, 25 touches from Cipriani. Thomas Young's morphed into a left wing. Beautiful. Okay, let's go on to the big subject of the week, the Champions Cup final. Murrayfield, Saturday afternoon, Saracens defending champions against Clermont. It's a cliche, perennial bridesmaids. What else do we call them? How do we get around that?
Catastrophic chokers.
You like it, yes. Can we put it worse than that? They got Strettel, a former Saracen, which is interesting. I don't know if that will make any difference. Should we just agree that Saracens are strong favourites for starters?
Yeah.
Yes.
What I hope is, as a neutral, that the final reflects the great talents of the two teams. That's what finals are supposed to do. Often they don't. I think they're two magnificent teams. The chokers is a difficult one because when you get to the final of anything, you're always going to come up against someone who's quite good and might beat you. It has happened to them a lot, but a lot of that was sort of almost 100 years ago. So they choked massively against Johnny Wilkinson and Toulon a few years ago, and again massively against a really poor Stade Francais team in the 2 or 3 years ago in the top 14. They are a great side. They've certainly, I feel, a sort of real pang towards them, because I would love to see such a magnificent club with such magnificent followers win the title, because I think they deserve one.
That chokers thing I found interesting. We always used to say, bizarrely, that that was the All Blacks' problem, their poison, wasn't it? And it would only happen 4 years apart. I mean, can you really be serial chokers if you've had 4 years to get over something? The point is, as you say, Jonesy, they get to a final and they don't quite get over the line. And the question is, at what stage does that just drip into your head and you think we can't get over the line?
The problem is, it's not even a case of just getting a whole new stack of players. There is a psychology in sports clubs. And if you go to somewhere like Clermont, and once or twice I've spent a couple of days there, it is very claustrophobic. And the place drips with rugby history and what they've achieved, or more to the point, all the times they haven't quite achieved it. And, you know, they've got Aurelien Rougerie there, who is a beacon of sort of social goodness in the town, but he's also a reminder of all the times they failed. And Steve mentioned a couple of them. Twice they did it against Toulon, but also Leinster away in, I think, the greatest quarter-final European rugby I've ever seen. Brock Jade single-handedly blew it. There was a semi-final in Bordeaux when they should have beaten them, and Wesley Fofana dropped it over the line. This team, psychologically, have found it very hard to win big games, and that is an issue. But what I would say, to try and end the choke element, Brock James was the mastermind of choking. He's the choker of all chokers. He did it against Gloucester in the Challenge Cup semi-final with La Rochelle playing at home. This man that's playing now, the French fly half, Camille Lopez, is the opposite. Against Toulon in the quarter-final, when there was a seven-point gap with 10 to go, he just said, give it to me, drop a goal, close the game out. Against Leinster, who were playing really well, and it was there or there for the taking for Leinster, two drop goals in the last 10 minutes, end of story. I may be wrong. I think Saracens will win, but I don't think Clermont will lose this time because they'll choke. I think Saracens will beat them because they'll be better over 80 minutes.
I'd also love to think that all the Saracens boys come through fit and etc. But I think Saracens are wonderful. I think Clermont are wonderful. I love going there. And like I say, if it was down to me to say who's going to win, I'd just love to see Clermont, for all my affection for Saracens, just take it away.
Mm. When you talk to those Clermont boys, it is a club right in the heart of the city. And Strettle and Bendon have spoken to them both about what it's like to be there. And they say literally you go for a coffee and you don't have to pay. You go out for dinner, you don't have to pay, because the bar owners, the restaurant owners know who you are.
That's like me in Newport.
Yeah, exactly. But you haven't taken us there recently.
Mm. No, when Big Ten Rugby comes back, we're all going.
Okay. But when they lose a game in Clermont, then they don't go out because they're not so welcome anymore. So I think it's a great place. For me, the Saracens question is, I think they'll get over the line this weekend. I think they are just getting stronger and stronger. But it's how much they've got in their legs for the rest of the season. You know, they've got this game, they've got extra away in their Premiership semi-final. Do they then get to a final? I mean, that's three colossal games and then a Lions tour.
I think if Saracens do the double again, and I'm not saying they won't, I think you can mark them down as the greatest English club team that any of us have seen. To have done back-to-back doubles, domestic and Europe, it is sensational. That would be three straight domestics, wouldn't it now? And a back-to-back if they win it this year. And to do it against an Exeter team who I think are almost redefining the way the game is played, English club level. Very interested in the way they're playing. Home advantage, huge confidence. I think to beat them 1 week after a European final against Clermont, who I don't think will choke, and then have to play probably a strong Wasps team in the final. Yeah, Saracens are the best team, I think, in Europe, but that doesn't mean they're going to win three games like that.
I totally agree. Sorry, Owen. Sarri's rested a few against Northampton recently and 10 on Saturday. OK, good luck to them. But now it's given them Exeter away. And what a horrendous prospect that is, even for Sarri's. Also agree with redefining the way games played. The last time I saw Exeter down at Sandy Park, I think Gareth Steenson kicked the ball once out of hand, which was staggering, because normally in the Aviva Premiership 5 years ago, you'd think talking about kicking it about 50 times.
Well, I like this best ever club team in Europe thing that you've been leading us on, Barnsley. Isn't that a bit unfair on your old Bath team? You never had a European trophy to play for. Are you being a bit generous there?
No, I mean, clearly we would have won a stack of European trophies, but I don't think, in all honesty, it was quite as competitive then. There were a few hard matches. And, you know, yeah, we went. We probably lost one league game a season for 4 years, I think. We were pretty hard to beat. But I think you've got to look at what they're playing against. In all seriousness, this is an astonishing thing Saracens are doing at the moment.
If you beat Saracens, how do you do it? What's the thing? You have to...
Exeter have got the way to beat them. Saracens will play territory and they will squeeze you. And the flip side is, when you give up and you try and run and you turn over, you either get hit on the turnover or from first phase. Their first phase back play is brilliant. I'm fed up with all this talk about the final's going to be out Clemo's attack and Sarri's defence.
Saris have changed since then.
Saracens' first phase. Clermont have got this fantastic pyrotechnic attack, but Sarri's first phase attack is the most precise in Europe. So how do you beat them? You keep the ball, and that's why Exeter make a compelling case, because they just keep the ball. As Jonesy was saying, you know, Steenson doesn't kick it. I watch Exeter now, and it's like last year when, you know, with Sky doing the Pro 12 League, Pat Lamb's Connacht team just kept the ball. But that team went sideways. They were very comfortable offloading, but they were happy to go across, back one way and then the other. This Exeter team, they go forwards because they're more powerful up front. They're formidable. I mean, the only question now for Exeter is, can they look in the eyes of the sort of Saracens gunslingers and not blanch? And that's just big issue, because Sarri's are psychologically nailed on against any team.
Can I just say one more thing about the final? In these days, you bid for the final in collaboration with your local authority or your district, blah blah blah. SIU got it this time, and I objected to that. I think it should have gone somewhere else. But if you bid for the final, you can't blame the all the supporters of the two teams if you don't fill the stadium.
No.
And I would be absolutely thrilled to see that the SIU, having bid for it and having been given it, have got their backsides in gear to get people there.
Mm, should be an occasion. Actually, the Murrayfield thing, on talking of Clermont and Chokers, is only... one player who's played in both Murrayfield Heineken Cup finals, who's playing in this one as well. It's Ben Kayser. That's some record. He's been there twice, lost twice. Of course, as you say, Barnsley, that's they're beyond that psychological thing. The night before, Friday evening, in the Challenge Cup final, Gloucester and Stade Francais. That's an interesting... They've had a really interesting last few weeks, both teams. Gloucester thought they were being bought, weren't bought. Stade tried to sell, couldn't sell. In the middle of that, they're trying to play a game of rugby from time to time. Stade seem to almost have been empowered by this. Gloucester, I think, have been edging towards a good team from time to time, but never convincingly.
Jeez, they've been edging towards being a good team from time to time for about... 5 years, haven't they?
I tell you what, they were bloody good in the first half of their first game of the season. That was probably when they peaked this year.
But they've had bloody good halves for most seasons since Dean Ryan left. They don't have a shape, but I mean, last week, the Exeter game, you can forgive them that. They were clearly targeting this game. And I know it's ludicrous that the Challenge Cup, that the winners should automatically be the 20th team to go into the Champions Cup. But they're not, so let's park that to the side and remember, and people do forget this, professional rugby players want trophy. I won't use that horrible word silverware, which is only ever used in sport, but trophies are really important. And if you look at the way Stade fought back against Bath when momentum had turned against them, the way Gloucester went and dug in hard in La Rochelle, you know, both these teams want to win a trophy, and that's very important. And whilst the winner should go into Europe next year, they're not, but this is a big game in its own right, and it will salvage, I think, yet another pretty mediocre season for Gloucester.
Jonesy, who takes the silverware?
I think the trophy, look, one of these things, it depends.
What do you do with your silverware?
I've got it all lined up.
Do you have a separate cabinet for silverware and trophies?
Yeah, but it's not all silverware because I got a lot of certificates, you see, so it's not all silverware. I got some silverware. I think I got the Isle of Man Sevens from 1922 when I was a sub in the final. Gloucester veer, but not very far. They veer between the bottom of the scale for adequacy, then they go down to almost not there, almost falling apart. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know why the owner would buy a club about a year ago and then want to sell it so soon. That worries me. The coaching staff still worry me greatly. I don't think they're anywhere near. I'd love to see them win because I love Gloucester, but I could easily see Stade Francais catching fire and sneaking it. Gloucester are not there yet, even if they win the silverware.
Saturday afternoon at the Ricoh Arena, I was sat next to Jonesy. We had a kind of last day of the football season type experience, didn't we? We were watching a really scintillating game in front of us, while at the same time looking at our phones, checking on the scores elsewhere. It was a day when actually all six games on that last day of the Premiership had a significance to what was going to happen, who was going to qualify for this, that and the other. A brilliant day. Best last day? I mean, we like tops and bottoms, best, worst. Was that the best last day ever?
Yeah, I think so, because it's been the best Premiership, no doubt about it. I mean, you look down the lower reaches of the table, play people like Sale and Newcastle going strong, nothing on it, and playing great rugby, scoring good tries, etc. The competitiveness at one stage, Northampton were going to qualify, as we saw. Then Quins were back on, and the Exeter were way down. Then they came back, etc. It was a great last day. It's been a great Premiership, and it's going from strength to strength. I absolutely loved it, and Bristol just will write their history wringing their hands about how they didn't ever measure up to it. But I think they'll be back next year with a good team. So it just goes on and on, goes from strength to strength. I've covered Wasps in the old days in North London in front of, say, 1,000 people. There were 31,000 there on Saturday. So I just loved the whole day, loved the whole season.
And actually, next season, you can see it kicking on even more, can't you? Because those teams around sort of 8, 9, 10, I feel will all get stronger. Sale will definitely get stronger they've got money to burn. Yeah. I feel Worcester on the verge of getting stronger.
Don't know. Newcastle would be the team. I mean, OK, Newcastle have made a bit of a move this season, and it is astonishing that they played so much good rugby when my old mate Dean is DOR and Wellesley, possibly the most negative flanker in the history of the game.
Say what you mean, Barnsley.
And not the most positive coach always, but the two of them now are pulling together something pretty good. I think Dave Walder must be doing a hell of a job.
Dave Walder must be a genius.
I'm coming around to the fact that Dave Walder is the man for England. I've really enjoyed watching Newcastle, and it's quite surprising when you look at the sort of tri-tally that they don't actually score that many, but they're penetration and the speed of their game is really good. And I think, all seriousness, I think Richards has done a cracking job there, and I think they will go very well next season. And like Steve, you look at it and you're thinking, who's not going to be a better team, which I think is a real gauge for a domestic tournament. And the only team I would look at and say, I don't know where they're going right now, would be Northampton.
Well, that's a fair point. I also think, if you're talking about the Tigers, if you're talking Ford, Tamua, Tuolangi, well, maybe they can do something as well. So, very exciting. Really, really looking forward to the semi.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
He's in the final.
Northampton are on the verge of serious slippage, as you say, aren't they?
Oh, they're there, Owen.
But they try. They've been trying all season to sign a first class number 10. They tried very hard for Ford. They think they tried for Madigan.
They didn't try for Charlie Hodgson a long time ago, and Saracens did, and it was significant. And I think it's not just about Northampton trying not getting the number 10.
They tried for Barry John and Phil Bennett as well, didn't they?
I don't think they did. They had Piggy Powell, who was moving from the loose head position to
Grosman.
I just think there's an issue above and beyond the playing side of it. I you know, whatever fly half you got, I think there's an intent to play a tight driving game, pick up and drive, and I just don't see any change in the way Northampton.
I don't think they're a happy place either.
You wouldn't be if your game isn't evolving. That's what makes players unhappy, if they don't feel there's any improvement. You know, only one team can win a league, but if your team aren't going in the right direction, that's a problem.
While the Premiership was having that exciting, amazing last day, much the same was going on in the Pro 12 in Stuart Barnes' land. Stuart Barnes, you were at
Parky Scarlet for the Scarlets against Osprey, 14,000, which is a cracking crowd there.
And it was the Scarlets coming really strong at the end of the season.
Scarlets playing fantastically. I mean, I watched them give Sarries a game in Europe away, and I thought, this is a good team. And they drew with him. Sarri scored a last-second try to, which ended Saracen's winning run in Europe with that draw. And they are a very good team now. Their back play, as I said earlier, is fantastic. They're confident.
Can they beat an Irish team in the semi-final?
The odds are on Leinster. Leinster, I think, are a very fine team. We saw that against Wasps. Can they do it? Yes, they can. They're playing that well. Will they do it? The odds, as I say, it's unlikely, but at 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon, I'd said it was unfeasible.
Mm.
Now I think it's possible.
Searching for sort of our ideal golden end, season ends, etc. You would just want a Welsh team versus an Irish team. Where we are now.
You want, just like the European Cup. You want two nationalities involved in it, because it comes sort of into Nissan, and would be lovely to think that one of the Welsh teams can do it. They've come late. I think I agree with Stuart. Slethley have got something about them, mainly in some ways a kind of what was always been native to them. Mm. I mean, two or three forwards stuck in there, then they're in business. That's really good, and it's a long-awaited sign of a resurgence. I thought it was a great weekend. It was a great idea to have all the derbies there, and let's hope it's a great final. I should just say, in the Pro 12 context, that as we speak, they're arranging a meeting at Newport Rugby Club to vote as to whether the shareholders allow the Welsh Rugby Union to take over. I've never been a fan of the regional concept, but if those diehard old codgers at Newport do not vote for the takeover, then you've got to question their love of rugby. You've got to point out that parochialism, I mean, its worst kind, lives and breathes in Newport and maybe Wales as well. So if when we wake up tomorrow we find that they voted against and there's not going to be any dragons, well, you can forget all that. The whole of Gwent can shut down and turn out the lights.
Very sad. I mean, I grew up and down the Gwent Valleys as a schoolboy, playing from Nantyglow down, where Newport was regarded as the posh team, and it was a hell of an education there. And as Steve says, the lights go out in the valleys. You know, it's economically not the place it once was, and it's struggling a bit. Rugby remains very important there, and it would be an area where Welsh rugby could still find a few forwards. It would be a real tragedy, a sporting tragedy.
Hear, hear.
This podcast has been recorded on a Tuesday morning. By Wednesday afternoon, we will have the result of the World Cup draw for the 2019 World Cup in Japan. All the big cheeses are over there as they slice up the pie and work out who's playing who. We're going to know who is in the infernal pool of death. We're going to know if England are going to avoid the All Blacks all the way to the final, if things go their way. I touched on it before. One thing we'll also know by the end of Wednesday is whether the controversial eligibility rule will have been changed. As you will probably know, if you move house from Fiji to Scotland and live there for 3 years, then you can play for Scotland, or from South Africa to Ireland, another favoured route. The move is to push it to 5 years. I believe that is the right thing. But Stuart, you made the point yesterday in your column, with which I do agree. It will balance out the rugby world as it should do, but it will imbalance the countries, the nations that have benefited, like Scotland and Ireland.
I think if you want to, by the way, I have always been, 5 years was minimal start for me. I've always been completely against it, but then I'm just starting to think that maybe the sort of your mother, your grandmother, your blood isn't that important, that if the team are happy, then you can get away with it.
I would say 5 years is more than... I've just found out that my granny was born somewhere. I mean, for me, that's a bit tenuous.
Well, we don't want to get back to the Shane Howarth one where he accused his Maori grandmother of having a dalliance with a Welsh sailor, which, unfortunately, granny was alive and let everyone know that was not the case. But, you know... 5 years, that takes you into a two World Cup cycle. And that means teams like Scotland and yes, Ireland, are not going to be able to go out and have their policy. Now, instinctively, I think, good, that's excellent. But Scotland have improved. One of the reasons they've improved, not just that they've been well coached by a Kiwi, they're getting good players.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
They're getting good players in holes that they need. They've only got two professional clubs. Scotland does not have that many good players. So do we want England and France, with their huge player base, to say it's wrong, we can't do that, and stop teams like Scotland and Ireland actually improving? And I understand the Pacific Island situation, and I don't know the answer, and I'm not going to pretend there is a straight answer, but all I'm saying is, whilst we're bleeding our hearts dry for Samoa, Tonga and Fiji, we mustn't forget that established rugby countries like Scotland have been left behind in the sort of professional race.
Look, some countries just don't have resources, and you can't stick them there artificially. I mean, Holland doesn't have any mountains. That's just a natural resource. You can't move mountains over there, so they feel part of it. And also, a lot of the people that have come over have been rubbish. I mean, the couple have been all right. No one's really taken the world by storm. But you look at the people, the people that are hanging around in Edinburgh that were signed by Solomon. So just rubbish.
But that's another. That's a different issue, Steve.
I don't know if either of you were there, but 2 years ago, I chaired a chat at the Cheltenham Literary Festival, where a senior, very, very senior, very, very senior Scottish player, sadly speaking off the record, entranced the whole audience by berating the principle of kilted Kiwis, of imported 3 year. Arivists who then buzz off straight away as soon as they've retired. He slaughtered it, and I tell you something, he is still a very important figure in Scotland, and I agree with him. And it is being watered down, and well done Gus Pichot for putting a stop to it.
Do you have a view on what about the grandparent thing though, Jones? I mean, Do we think it's right that Ben Teoh is now playing for England?
He's got nothing to do with England at all.
Culturally, he's completely and utterly from the other side of the world.
Yes, he is, and I don't like it.
To him, that's not a personal thing, but that is the way it is, isn't it?
Leslie Vinicola was also shocking as well, because he qualified in rugby league. But no, I'm not happy with that, frankly.
But wasn't it Ben Teoh, when England got knocked out of the World Cup, was going on Twitter and gloating and enjoying it so much, and then a couple of weeks later, I'm not eligible for Ireland till I play my 3 years here, but I am for England. I'm off over there, bang. What are the England fans I know in the Six Nations when Ben Teoh came off the bench and had fantastic roles? They didn't stand there silently and say, we're not going to applaud and cheer because you're actually culturally not English. They were delighted.
I think once the man's got the national shirt on, then your fans go, he's one of us, and that's fair enough. It's whether he should have been allowed the national shirt in the first place. While all that was happening in the Premiership and the Pro 12, of course, there was another scintillating weekend of Super Rugby with end-to-end tries and All Black injuries, which is the sort of one of the themes of the moment. We know that Kieran Reid is injured, thumb. We know that Jerome Kano is injured, knee, I think, if I remember rightly. A body part of some sort. Who would be next in? Liam Squire is one of the leading back rowers. He broke his thumb at the weekend as well. They also came a bit cleaner on the injury to Dane Coles, which had apparently been a calf injury, but now it's a long-term concussion.
Yeah, well, normally, you know, calf to concussion, it's not far to go, and Dane's not that tall, so, you know, you can travel from the knee to the head pretty quickly, these injuries.
But he is... he's the world best in his position, in my opinion, and would be a major loss for them. I mean, we're at that stage where you're picking up injuries, and does it affect the series?
I don't think we are at that stage quite yet. There's a long time to go before the tests, and I think one thing with New Zealand and the Lions, you know, unless you end up with about 8 or 9 of your front line out, you can't really bleat too much. This is the country that's the number one in the world because of its strength in depth.
They've got no right to bleat, but
every team has men out. Wherever they are, every team has men out.
But there will be key men where your team will be weaker if they're out. The All Blacks do not have another number 8 with more than 10 caps.
No, if they lose Dane Coles at hooker and they lose Kieran Reid, that is a heavy blow. All I'm saying is New Zealand won't bleat because they've got a lot of good players. Now, Squire probably is the next man on the block. Kano, third choice number 8. It's possible. So they could be in trouble there. But then you watch, they'll have to change the way they play. But Ardie Surveyor would probably be the next guy off the block. Now, for years, he's been seen as the guy pushing Sam Kane to be the next number 7 after Richie McCaw, but he's playing number 8 now, and I don't think that's a coincidence. And he's not 6'8", and he ain't going to win line-out ball like Kieran Reid, but he is one hell of a player around the park.
I think that I'd like to see Kieran Reid out there because he won't be able to play on the left wing against Billy Vunipola and Toby Faletau, and I'd like to see how he makes out when he's dragged into a different sort of game to the one he wants to play.
Well, that's the great tactical issue. If the Lions can pull Kieran Reid out of his 5-metre channel where he is majestic, then they've got a chance, and it'll be the test. Can Gatland get a game plan together and the players who can steamroll in New Zealand and make those wide boys play in tighter channels?
Gatland was the Lions were yesterday for their first gathering was on again about how we have to culturally understand where we're going. Which I find interesting. He gives them a list of films that the Lions should be watching and some bands that they should be listening to.
I got a real problem with that.
That's nonsense.
I got a real problem. Look, I know why Warren wants to do it, because when you go down there, the Maori elders, for instance, if you sneeze on the wrong side of the street, you get a Maori elder disagreeing with another Maori elder, telling me you shouldn't have done it. The All Blacks, when they came up to Wales and demanded to do the haka after the Welsh national anthem, what cultural respect did they show to Wales that day? The Maoris is great. We all go there and see their tongues hanging out. That's great. I respect Warren for going there. But frankly, the Lions going there to win a match, you don't have to fall over yourself to pay homage to a country which never pays homage to anyone else wherever they go.
Well, I don't mind the paying the homage. It's just what does your knowledge of Crowded House and Split Ends have to do with whether you're going to win a Test series?
If Bob Dylan was a Kiwi, I'd understand, but he's not. So it's absolutely preposterous. And, you know, take Janet Frame out of the equation, and I can't think of too many Kiwi authors. I mean, show a bit of respect to their rugby team. They're quite good, but I don't know about the rest of it.
I'll be keeping Bruce Springsteen on my iPod. Thank you.
One player who won't be going to New Zealand, I think we can be pretty sure of that now, is Mike Brown. He had an interesting. I felt from over the weekend. It was one of those media statements that got reused, and then and he became the complete villain. So he gave an interview saying he was disappointed not to be in. That became a headline where he slammed the Lions for not picking him, and then that was then replayed to Warren Gatland. Warren Gatland made a really snide remark when he said it's not just on rugby ability that we were selecting, which was a comment on Mike Brown's personality as a potential tourist. So Brown, from saying he was disappointed, has now been effectively slandered in public. I felt sorry for him. Every newspaper ran it. I can't say our newspaper didn't run it. Your opinion, chaps?
He was said he was gutted that he wasn't there, which leaving aside all the other fuss, which you mentioned, Owen, was a completely bizarre statement. If Rob Carney had been fit, he would have gone there before Mike Brown, or they would have brought another wing in and shift Halfpenny to fullback. If I was Alex Goode, I would feel a lot more gutted than Mike Brown to have got so unbelievably criminally little opportunity. I don't think Mike Brown has played well. I certainly don't see him as a Lion on or off the
field. I completely agree with that. I think he's about 10th choice standby to come in.
Listen, he started it, and does he not know what happens in the media these days?
What can he do, Steve? He's asked a leading question. Players have a minimal amount of media training. The only story is, in the end, I mean, the headline is made by us, isn't it? It's not made by Mike Brown. The only real story is there. If Mike Brown says, I couldn't give a damn about not getting picked, I didn't think I was good enough on form, that would be interesting. But Mike Brown saying, I'm gutted, is not interesting, because everyone knows the bloke, whatever you say about him, he's not in great form, but he is a competitor and he will back himself. You know, that's how players who aren't of the very highest talent get to the position where Mike Brown has found himself, because of sheer willpower. And because of that, he's going to feel the hurt. And there's nothing wrong with him saying, I'm disappointed not to be in the Lions team. What's disappointing is us writing it and people thinking it's of any real interest, because it's not.
Oh, sure. Well, come on, it's of massive interest because it was plastered all over the place.
Yeah, but
so in this room, in the headquarters of News, the biggest and most famous newspaper publisher in the world, we're going to start attacking newspapers. It's just the way it is. He started it. He made a comment. He is old enough and has won enough caps to know exactly how the media works and to be very careful that his message got across. And he didn't do it.
OK, that's all from us for this week. Thank you very much, Jonesy, Barnsley. Another good week. Thank you, anyone who has listened, anyone who subscribed. You can leave messages on our iTunes account to join the conversation. We will be back next week after the European Cup final, after the World Cup draw. A lot more to talk about. Have a good weekend.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.